Hi, everyone. Welcome to Type Talks. Today, we're here with our guest, Dario Nardi, and he has written a new book, and it's called Decode Your Personality, Go Beyond Myers-Briggs with 64 Brain-Based Subtypes. And so the subtypes are inspired by the DCNH model created by Viktor Kolenko, and it stands for Dominant, Creative, Normalizing, and Harmonizing. Dario explores this in lots of depth in his book, so feel free to check it out. I'll have it linked below. Dario, could you give the audience a quick introduction to you for those who are new?
Yeah, it was 30 years ago that I got certified as an MBTI practitioner and then master practitioner. And I was trained under Dr. Linda Behrens, who was a student of Dr. David Kiersey of Please Understand Me. So a nice lineage there, and have been part of the type community, doing workshops, publishing, attending workshops, learning. A lot of that was in person, began technically before the World Wide Web existed. And so a lot of type was a firsthand experience, and I've been doing that for 30 years. And then the neuroscience stuff began around 2006. And I've just been continuing with that. And folks may know me from Neuroscience of Personality. And that is, that was a report on a pilot study. So I wasn't expecting it was going to prove anything, whatever it was, but I wanted to get the information out there and get like juice up people and get people excited and maybe inspire more from it. And it has allowed me to do a lot more research now with over 600 people from different parts of the world and different age groups and ethnicities and all of that. So it really has been nice to do that. I taught at UCLA in computing and anthropology for, 17 years. And ran a publishing company during some of that time. And really now I'm just an independent author and contractor and enjoying life around the world.
It's always good to enjoy life. I actually have an episode I'd recorded with Dario Nardi on getting my brain scanned by him that I will release after this one shortly. So for those who are curious about the neuroscience of personality, you will see it in real time as he looks over my brain scan results for all of you to see. And so, yeah, welcome, welcome. I know those watching are really curious to know about their subtype of their personality type. So I will be interviewing Dario Nardi on each of the personality types and how the subtype shows up in them. And I will have his book linked down below too, because he goes into excellent depth there as well. So today, Dario, I'd love to talk to you about the behind the scenes of this book. That in this, you talk about the yin and yang of each version of the functions, the analytic and holistic bent that they can take. And so I'm curious if you could describe all your thoughts around that to people who are like, what is yin and yang functions?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you and I, we did have a discussion about this, and I don't even remember when that was, maybe a year ago, something like that. And for folks who are not familiar with that, I would say go back and find Joyce's interview with me. And the interview was transcribed and cleaned up a little bit and expanded upon in the book. Not the best camera to show this, but in the book, how it got started is that I had an intern and she wanted to look through the data for her type, ENFP preferences, and just begin sorting people into different groups based upon their brain wiring. And looking at like, well, if you sort them all into male and female or all into like maybe four different kinds of like career and, you know, academic major categories, what kind of patterns do we see? And very clearly, it broke down into, well, I mean, you can always do as many or as few categories as you want, but what can we justify statistically and everything? And very cleanly, we could just talk about if we wanted a sort of an analytic and holistic, and those are neuroscience terms, view of ENFPs. And what's so cool is that the analytic ENFPs have their brains sort of wired one way, and the holistic ENFPs tend to have their brains wired another way. They may still share between them some favorite regions. The question is, how are those regions connected? And the holistic ones tend to have more regions, really sometimes that are like all connected to work all at once. And the analytic ones, yeah, they may be a little bit more left-brained, but they're a little bit more, I don't want to say linear thinkers, but they rely upon specific brain regions to do like inference making and hypothesizing and rapport building and brainstorming and various things. And what was so cool when we compared the two, say like analytic and holistic, you could see, particularly among, and the majority of the database now is adults working, that there was a big career difference. And the roles, the kinds of roles that they played in their organizations, and that really, if they weren't so different, is that what was in the foreground for one was in the background for the other in terms of brain wiring. So like what popped out for the analytic people was actually there for the holistic people. It was just there in the background. And then vice versa for the other ENFPs. And that inspired me to begin looking at all of them, a slog as that was, having to figure out how to like sort and combine biostatistics and like how to different ways to look at all the people of every different type and really seeing this very clear difference. And then, of course, you can group people by type like ENFPs, ENTPs, or all NP types. They all have extroverted intuiting. What patterns do we see in common? And that was the genesis of it. That wasn't the only thing. It came through also in some discussions. And I did ENFP and then INTJ because I'm like, oh, what are the results? Because we just looked at one type and INTJ is my own type. So I'm like, look at that. And then I was invited to this talk with Dr. Viktor Galenko, who's an expert in socionics, a Ukrainian psychologist. And they were going to use ENFJ as an example. And I was invited to present my data on brain wiring and so on for ENFJs. And the ENFJ also broke down very clearly. In that time, because Viktor was working with the subtypes, the socionic subtypes, dominant, normalizing, creative, harmonizing, that they actually lined up very nicely. And I ended up asking Viktor, can I just use your terms? Because that provides continuity. And the same, I think subtype is a little bit misleading. It's not like smaller boxes, because this was really reflecting development and is changeable. But it provides some continuity theory-wise, and it's easy for people to understand, as opposed to calling it variance or something like that.
Yeah, because people don't want more variance, especially in this COVID pandemic. Yeah. You mentioned how with the brain scans, they're valid for around 2 years, and then your subtype could have some changes to it. Like for me, I'm creative, but the harmonizing is showing up in my brain too. So it's an emerging pattern. Very cool stuff. And so I'll have my interviews with Dario Nardi about the analytic and holistic function linked below, and also the interview about the DCNH, if you're new to those subtypes as well. All right. And so Dario, in this book, you talk about neurotic boundaries, and this is a way that someone can actually determine their type more clearly. And it has to do with the third function. So I'm curious, could you go into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So even though the subtypes is like a big obvious piece to help identify the book, it's not actually the only thing that the book is about. What I really try and do is, first of all, I think the book is suitable for somebody maybe not completely new to type, but somebody who like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I know what my type is. Maybe I'm not completely settled. Maybe they've heard of cognitive functions, but they're like not really clear on exactly what's what. Like the book is fine for that group of people and beyond. And each chapter is set up in a way that touches on some important points, like looks at the type from different angles. And some of that is just like, yeah, what's like the common themes of the type and the cracking the type code, the four-letter code, and then the function stack, just the first four. Let's keep it simple. Talking about the roles that the favored functions play. And not just say, so for like INFJ, it would be introverted intuiting and extroverted feeling. But beyond that, it's like what flavor of introverted intuiting? Is it more like the visionary or more the oracle flavor of it? And what does that look like? And then putting in some stuff from interviews of 64 people of the various types to have like, you know, everybody wants a type description. So let's get a type description, but in people's own words. And then we do the subtypes, which we have and we will talk about. And then I felt, okay, so we showed the function stack. Shouldn't we show the third and fourth functions? And the third function is just, it just occurred to me, like it gets described different ways. And the way Linda Behrens described it, she's like, well, it's a place of like recharging and relaxation. And John Beebe talks about is this is where your child function is and so on. Personality Hacker talks, it is like, you know, your 10-year-old. in your car. Maybe you're 12 if it's you're lucky. And you know, Jung took very much, if you read Psychological Types, I don't want to say like a psychiatric point of view, but he definitely described every function most of the time in terms of all the ways it goes wrong. And a lot of that time has to do with imbalance or like overuse compared to the opposing function, whatever that is. So it's introverted intuiting and then extroverted sensing. And but I don't know, there's this idea though that between the ego, the aware self, and or I can even use a little example here. We have a cup, and between the sort of the ego is everything we know that's on the inside of the cup. And then there's all the stuff that's on the outside. There's a boundary. That's the cup itself. And like the space is just around the cup. And I feel like the third function plays more than just like, oh, it's one character in the theater troupe of your psyche. That's a really essential character, that it's in that gray space that's between the ego and the unconscious. So sometimes we can push it completely out of awareness. Sometimes we bring it completely into awareness and it works great. Sometimes it's just like, oh my God, what on earth is happening here? And what inspired me was actually all the time I spend at the beach and noticing, like in Costa Rica, how as the tide goes in and out, what you see as the tide goes in and out changes dramatically. Whether you see the reef or the reef is completely submerged, many times it might look safe to go surfing, but I happen to know that actually there's a reef under this part here and you don't want to go there. This idea of boundaries is very important. And the boundary isn't just like some thin little thing that we step over, that in fact, it's a really wide thing. And so a lot of our strengths can come out of that, you know, really, really nice automatic sort of special stuff like INTJ and ISTJ are known that we're loyal. We tend to be somewhat moralistic, especially against something like hypocrisy or like some kind of observed moral failing. But on the other hand, we tend to like distance ourselves from our emotions. And if you really push us, how do you feel? We're like, oh, okay, like I'll get to that. Very self-motivating. So motivation is not an issue. You know, there's like these pluses and minuses, but how does it show up for every type? And I just, as I began to think about it, I'm like, wow, there is stuff for every type. And then I generated some stuff and worked with this Magic Diamond reading group led by Elena Wolf. And then also Joel and Antonia, I sent it to them and to the group of the sort of their staff and so on. And they're like, oh, like this completely works for all of us, unfortunately. So, you know, it's like ENTP and ESTP, blaming their emotional state on the people around them. Yeah, I mean, this is just something that happens. Whereas INTJ, ISTJ are always like, oh, if I feel badly or angry or this or that, it's always my fault. That not that I caused the problem, but the feeling, what is the origin of the feeling? And it's like, oh, I should manage myself. And so there's just something for every type. And I feel like it's a really important data point. So if somebody's even debating between, say, INFP or ENFP, I suspect that's sort of a common one to debate. So any of you INFP or ENFP, their neurotic boundary is actually completely different. Their hidden aspirations also in the fourth function, completely different. So if you're not sure in terms of your data point, oh, which one is dominant, which one is auxiliary, is like, this gives, it's not just like reading the description of say TE and SI, extroverted thinking, introverted sensing, and asking like, where does this fit? How much do I do this? That's not the right question. The right question is like, how does it show up for me? And how it shows up is like SI, definitely neurotic zone for INFP. ENFP can like be oblivious to it 80-90% of the time. And then oppositely for TE. So I think it's a great way to highlight, like make each type more like fleshed out and also give us an extra data point when we're sorting for type, trying to figure out what is our best fit type or somebody else.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. The neurotic boundary is really underplayed when sorting type. And you mentioned how an ENFP and INFP have completely different neurotic boundaries. What is the ENFP's neurotic boundary and how does it contrast with the INFP's?
Since we have the book here and we want to showcase the book, and I always know where I am in the book because the exact center of the book just happens to be INTJ, which was genuinely not planned. It just turned out that way. But let's take a look. So for the neurotic zone for ENFP. Okay, so this is extroverted thinking. Tend to under or overmanage. So many times undermanaging, but then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, and then they start to overmanage. Easily frustrated or feel lost in logistical and technical details such as paperwork. It's not like INFP who avoids tackling that or then just sits down and be like, okay, I'm going to do it. I don't like it, but I'm going to do it. This is just like a literal, like the ENFP or ESFP wants to like shake the other person, just like throw the papers out the window. There's this reaction to it. Can panic at deadlines, under or over explain, either losing others when they're thinking, when they think that they're clear. This happens, especially with ENFP. They're thinking they're very clear. They're in front of a group of people. They're talking to people. They're a manager. They're explaining stuff. And the other people around them are like, what? It's not because of the words that are used or something that is too abstract or what. I mean, that some of it is just, it's not even remotely in a linear order for people to digest. Or sometimes they're very clear and then they're actually neurotic about it because they're thinking, oh no, but what if I am unclear? So one of the things, it's not, yes, INFP can experience some of these things, but it's really about like swinging from one direction to the next. Is very this or very that. Rejecting hierarchy and authority figures and rules, yet also easily buying into or ignoring institutional failures. I'm sorry to say I've worked in enough institutions, especially in universities, ENFP and also ESFP, just whistle past the moral failings of the institutions. They're aware of them. And they're, at some point, they're just like, that's not my problem. The hierarchy is not my problem. And I think in contrast, INFP can definitely be feeling like, I need to do something about this. I need to say something, like this is violating my introverted feeling. It's confused being blunt or making up reasons for actual reasoning with evidence. I remember talking to an ENFP, young ENFP, who discovered the power of making up reasons. You can just make up reasons for things. And they sound completely plausible. They may be completely wrong also. So it's just like, okay, get other people to buy in, but there's no actual evidence with that. Troubleshooting, so ENFP, ESFP, both pretty good at troubleshooting in practice, but they tend to under or overdo it. And they're either going to completely avoid it or they're going to throw themselves into it completely. It's sort of like, have you ever sat with a relative, and this could be anybody, I'm just making an analogy, who like feels the need to adjust the television, like the color or not just the volume, but like the display or something as you're watching like the key scene in the movie. I'm like, can we just at least pause the movie as you fix it? Do we have to have you fixing it as the movie is playing during the key moment? Like, why did you pick now? And there's like a consequences be damned attitude, which I feel like INFP does not have at all. That really ESFP in particular, but ENFP also is like, oh, let the chips fall where they may. I mean, in terms of calculating what's going to happen ahead of time, we're just going to be like, yeah, just wherever it's going to go. And there's this desire to want to be detached and objective, and yet also finding that really difficult at the same time, because otherwise they like have no motivation if they actually are detached from it. So they have to be like excited and have a reason for being there and personally involved. Same for ESFP. I don't know. I probably went on too long about that, but that's an example. It's not just any one thing. It's the constellation of all of those things and how, and I want to emphasize, it's not the behaviors. It's the neurotic reaction that the person experiences as they're doing those behaviors. Anybody could do the, oh my God, any perceiving type could be like, oh, there's a deadline. But it's like it occupies this neurotic position in the person's life. And to put a little cap on this, what's the point of describing it if we can't do something about it? And my answer is, yeah, there's like self-management skills, but also the neurotic boundary is how you grow. So you really are going to have a neurotic boundary all the time. Maybe you manage it better, a lot better sometime than others. The important thing, though, is looking for ways to grow from it. That's where all of the new stuff comes in and the creativity and all of that. So these people can be quite, ENFP, ESFP can look very competent at TE, but it also is a source of like neurotic stress for them. And it's always going to be there. There's no solution to it. It's not going to, you can't get rid of it completely. but it is something to grow from. And then we could go on for INFP.
Well said. There is the phenomenon known for ENFPs and ESFPs called the TE voice switch. They're usually very easygoing, but when you get them in a TE mode, this really assertive voice comes out and it's like, whoa. And it can be almost a little bit assertive or aggressive even a little bit. And you wouldn't expect it from the ENFP or ESFP, but it's inside them. You've released the Kraken and they're like, all right, we got to get this done right now. It's almost like it stresses them out to be in TE. So they want to finish the TE thing as fast as possible so they can go back to being chill again. And it's like, wow, I did not expect that personality shift.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same kind of experience or reaction from ISTJ and INTJ, that when we get into emotional space, we tend to rush through it in order to get over it as soon as possible.
Wow.
And that's like, I can deal with it, but I don't like to be here. There's something naturally uncomfortable about it. And even if there's that moment where all of a sudden ISTJ, INTJ become extremely like the voice of moral authority and condemnation, that's only going to last for so long. It doesn't last very long. And it's almost like I'm doing this in order to clear the deck. And just be like, let God sort them out after this moment.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. I noticed with INTJs and ISTJs, there can be knowing when you're sharing something vulnerable and trying to understand if you are handing over a potential weakness to another person for them to use against you. Mm. So it's almost like, if I tell you my FI, will it be weaponized against me?
Yeah.
So that there's a little bit of neuroticism of the FI there too.
Yeah, I think it's always important to keep in mind that whenever we talk about a function, that not only is in the context, so the third function is like working along with the first function many times, but that it also has this polarity with the second function. And so there's this, as you said, like protectiveness, that whenever the third function has claws out, that the second function is also there doing something in the background.
And so I'm curious, Dario, if we could look at the INFP's neurotic zone. You've got me really curious.
Oh, okay. Okay. This is going to be introverted sensing. And where INFP is in every book, it always ends up being last in the 16 types, saving the best for last. And so this is what it looks like. The lack of action, endless researching, listening, etc., easily caught up in bad habits or a routine, sometimes for years, tend to ignore health, their like social presentation and physical environment, or they settle on one thing and they just repeat it. Can hyper-focus on odd body signals or inner bodily signals, yet don't give consistent care to their actual needs. Strongly accept or strongly reject norms, such as establishment tools, historical data, certified experts, social etiquette. Sometimes they'll be very strongly against something and then they'll be very strongly for something else. And it's not just the FI, it's that it's around something that's related to introverted sensing, like historical data or societal norms or like establishment, like standard operating procedures. How do they feel about that? I use a phrase like anchored cloud. There's this cloud and it's floating around over a valley and it never moves on to somewhere else, or it very rarely does. It just sort of like hangs around in that area. Can easily dismiss hard facts, bottom line consequences, or the material world because only the underlying motive or meaning or mental modeled idea is what's relevant for them. I find it so shocking, and I just heard it even this past year in INFP saying that what is so important to him is people, the person's intention or motive, that he doesn't even notice what the consequences are. And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, my extroverted thinking is like, no, because a person could have the best intentions of the world and have like disastrous consequences. And obviously the result can be the opposite also. I mean, somebody could have bad intentions and it's like good to know that ahead of time. But I feel like that's very much the third function with introverted sensing, is the being drawn into some kind of habit. Like many times reject habit, don't want this, don't want that. But ultimately they have to. They live in the world. So they live somewhere. They eat something. They go somewhere. And those become consciously or not part of their habits. And then at some point they're like, oh yeah, I get all of these like weird body signals all the time and I try to shut them out. And so then I decided to like take a cooking course and learn more about cooking. And then like a year down the road, they're still eating badly for their body, even though they did all of this research and exploration. And what I'm saying could apply to INTP as well. And it's almost like the SI stuff, whether that's the impressions of what they've encountered in the world, those have a really strong impact on them. And either then they're going to completely shut out the feeling of that impact or the knowledge of it, or they just like go whole hog and embrace it. And that's where the introverted sense with introverted feeling comes in and be like, oh, like I'm a religious missionary or a political rebel or whatever it is, as part of it. And it also explains why they can completely buy into something, learning like all these different like establishment tools for whether it's science or medicine or whatever thing that whatever domain they work in, embrace it and then don't really question it after that. So it ends up being, as I sort of say, it's like imagine being terrorized by your body and your environment all the time. And of course, it's not that they're being directly terrorized. It's not extroverted sensing. It's that their reaction to the environment is what is creating this neurotic feeling. Whereas the like ISTJ or ISFJ has such an accumulation of strength with their reactions to the environment that they find ways to manage it very easily and the heroic part of themselves. So at first, like what I said for ENFP, I imagine there were INFPs who were like nodding their head and like, yeah, I can see that about myself too. And then let's go over and talk about INFP. And we see like, oh yeah, that's like a very different, they're both cans of worms, but it's a very different can of worms.
One is gummy worms and one is real worms, uncomparable.
Yeah, yeah. For the other, the ENFP is like, oh yeah, this INFP stuff, those are like gummy worms to me. But for the INFP, those are really worms. And I think actually, it's not that nothing can be done when we actually take the time to deal with the neurotic responses and find ways to manage those and to integrate them into our lives, then it can in fact be quite healthy. And then we just graduate to a new set of challenges.
I totally agree. INTP has the same neurotic boundary as INFP. So yes, they share that commonality. And I know INTPs who will get stuck in their routine and get neurotic about it because they actually want to go out and experience the world, but they realize their routine is so comfortable. They kind of would desire someone to bring them out of their comfort zone and just take them outside because mm-hmm. they're like, man, when left to my comforts, I can do the same old thing over and over again. And I get too stuck in this. It's almost like a frog boiling in water. Mm-hmm. If you boil mm-hmm. it right away, they'll jump out. But if you slowly raise the temperature, the frog will just stay in the water until it boils and dies inside the boiled water.
Yeah, and no, I mean, gruesome, but true. Yes, a good analogy.
Yeah, tertiary SI is a very addictive drug of routine.
Yeah, and it is very much about comfort and liking that comfort.
Absolutely. So I'm thinking about the neurotic zone for the ESTJ and the ESFJ. That would be their tertiary extroverted intuition. Yes. Is it that they swing from these ideas and constantly are neurotic about exploring ideas or thinking about ideas? Like, I'm curious where that
lies. I think to keep it short, so ESFJ, when there's a neurotic zone, it's not just about creating drama. It's surprise drama. It's like creative opera level drama. You're like, oh, where did that twist come from? Did not see that. With ESTJ, there's this level of like snarky, nasty, on the spot humor that they're just so capable of. And it really is like it's coming up with that retort in the moment that's very quick. And yet it's also, I would say, you're strongly shaded by their extroverted thinking. So there's a level of like cynicism and sort of nastiness that comes with it. And I think those are two examples of how it shows up. It's interesting because both of those types are not quite as socially conservative as or culturally conservative as their introverted parts. So eventually they will adopt the social norms and customs as the generations change, and they're open to talking philosophy and ideas. And so it doesn't mean they're going to adopt those, but they're open to having some like fun discussions. They do enjoy sort of the imaginative what if in terms of being naughty or doing something outside the box, as long as you don't actually do that. although they might actually. And then they can also, yes, like really strongly resist and ridicule new ideas or anything that's outside the box, push it completely outside of their awareness. You know, ESTJ would much rather say as like an executive at a company, think of 10, 20, like very small, I want to say like patches to the frame company and its problems and apply those known solutions, which aren't really solutions. They're just like band-aids, than to actually step outside the box and be like, oh, we need to actually completely rethink what we're doing, which is just a really, really big thing for them. Where I think for both types, it can come in nicely is when they draw upon, yes, their giant database of experiences and knowledge of history and culture and like comfort with that, and begin to like connect all the dots of their life. And it's the connecting the dots. Like, weirdly, I find ESTJs actually can be very good in terms of assessing people's character and connecting the dots in terms of character, because they have that inner NFP who's like alert to like what's really going on with people. And that's a way that it can show up. But a lot of times they actually just push that outside of their awareness too. They don't want to actually know what's going on with people psychologically, whatever. That's just like gobbledygook to them and gets in the way of work, but they can do it. And when they do it, they just want to rush through it and operationalize it and then check off that box and move to the next thing.
Yeah, I could totally see that. They have that extroverted intuition wittiness, but they use it in a neurotic way.
Yes, yeah.
Fascinating. And so when it comes to ENTJ and ENFJ, they have tertiary extroverted sensing. So yeah. How would you explain that?
The way I see it showing up the most is on the one hand, they have grand plans, the introverted intuiting. And on the other hand, they're very easily caught up by and or caught up into and entertained by adolescent fun. Like physical activities and just to like, oh, doing this and doing that. And I mean, this is why they figure like, oh, but I'm a manager, so I'll get other people to implement the details while I just go out and party. And they do actually, both of those types really do get easily distracted by adolescent fun. I think also that there's this, the danger that can come with extroverted sensing when the limits are not properly established is that the person does things which are dangerous, like risky in a life sense, yes, but also just in a day-to-day, like forgetting to eat, not sleeping adequately. I remember an ENFJ just a couple of years ago bragging how he didn't sleep for 3 days. He didn't need to. I'm like, dude, that is not healthy. That is, do you know how much stress that puts on your body? Like that is not something, I mean, it's a fun story to tell, but he really was telling it like, oh yeah, I'm somebody who doesn't need sleep. And I'm like, no, you need sleep. Your extroverted sensing is just all puffed up right now. That's all. It's just equivalent of me as an INTJ having like a moral outburst. And there is this feeling like, oh, I don't have to adhere to the rules that everybody else does, because I can just break limits and cross boundaries and take risks and all of these things. And they're not ESFPs or ESTPs though. And so those are going to come back to bite them, because it is a space where a lot of the times they'll be just like, oh, I don't need to eat or sleep or so they're neglecting that, or they're taking some like physical risk, whatever it is. And then other times when they get caught up in it, and then there doesn't seem to be any solutions to it. And it's and then there's like, oh, well, how did I get in this situation? How did I end up in jail, metaphorically speaking, or maybe literally? Probably not too much literally, but metaphorically speaking. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, that's what happens when you go out and you have this experience, like childlike extroverted or like tween. I want to say tween extroverted sensing.
Yeah. ENFJs, they're infamous for spreading themselves too thin. And so it could be the extroverted sensing that's like, all right, right now, the moment is now, let's milk the moment. And then they stretch it. And then they're like, they feel neurotic about it. And they're like, oh, I really need to put up boundaries in my life. And they have this like neurotic swing of boundaries. And then they spread themselves thin all over again. Mm-hmm. And so the cycle repeats, rinse and repeat, lather, yeah. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. And sometimes it can look like the ENTJ is self-managing better because they have that extroverted thinking, which provides like order and discipline and plans and stuff like that. That's all an illusion. ENTJ is not concerned with whether they've really paid their bills or their bet is made or anything like that. They're really there. Half of it, a big piece, is they want to have fun in whatever dream it is that they're pursuing. And they're the ones that put on the squirrel suit and jump from the side of the cliff and then, you know, smash into something. And that, just saying, I've only met one person who did the squirrel suit thing and he was an ENTJ. But a lot of them do like those more like physical risky activities and can handle them fine most of the time. But it is an example of something that they feel like if I don't do it, then I'm not living. And so there's this like neurotic drive almost to do it. And the irony is that when they're in the moment, they're not actually enjoying it. There's like, both of the types are thinking like, oh yeah, they go to the dance or they go to the like skydiving or whatever. And then the whole time they're still in their head and they're still like seeking problems and like their head is thinking of solutions and future plans and whatever. Like they're not actually enjoying their beach trip, even as they're sitting with all of their friends doing their adolescent beach trip, which doesn't fulfill any of their NI dreams at all.
Well said. Sometimes our neurotic zone can hijack our second function, it seems.
Yeah.
Oh man. I think another way that the ENTJ neuroticism around the third function can show up is I know a lot of ENTJs who fixate on revenge. So when you wrong an ENTJ, that is the number one type that I would not want to wrong out of all the 16 types the most, because they want to figure out the maximum impact way to, in the moment, get revenge on you. They really get neurotic about getting revenge. And so they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to find the best way to screw you over the most just so you can feel it. SE, right now, I'm going to find all the ways to TE maximize my impact on your life in a negative way. Mm. And it's this fun SE looking at the results immediately in front of you as you're able to ruin parts of their life.
Yeah. I would say, and this is the other book that came out, which was The Teaching Tales for the 16 Types, that what I discovered is that every pair of opposite types has a set of themes in common. The other type that also rejoices in instant revenge is ISFP, the exact opposite. And that's something that both ENTJ and ISFP have in common.
Oh, that is so cool. Your opposite has things in common with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And for ENTJ and ESFP, it's like, just to think of an example, it's like, you know what? I'm dissatisfied with my environment. I don't feel challenged. So I'm going to go on a physical journey, like to somewhere I've never been before, in order to discover something new that I don't know what it is. And both ESFP and ENTJ will be like, oh yeah, I can relate to that. It's absolutely something that they will do.
Yeah. How about INFJ and ESTP?
I think a bit of it is, it's for both types. So just so folks are wondering, it's this book here that I'm referring to. For what it is, it's the unpleasant encounter with the unconscious, that something rises up from the unconscious, or something happens to them that they're not even aware that's happened. That's a little bit more ESTP. And then they feel completely bitten in the ass by it. And, or it's just like completely, that's more ESTP. INFJ is like, oh, you know, it's like something has come up from the unconscious that they have to wrestle with and deal with. And so no matter how it comes up, whether it's like a joyful or it's unpleasant or whatever it is, it's material that comes up from the unconscious that they really have to wrestle with, that they feel like they really want to wrestle with it.
That's so true. That's a lot of insight. It's like you really do have traits of your opposite in every single way of that word. And so, Dario, I'm wondering, for the ISFP and the ISTP, they have tertiary introverted intuition.
Yes.
So how does this show up neurotically?
I have a lot of experience with these types. Either it is the massively overblown vision of amazing success and how awesome that's going to be, or this is absolutely impossible. I'm a pathetic loser for even entertaining this idea. There's no way it can happen. I give up. That's one way that it shows up, is this extreme NI vision for or against, and then giving up with it. Another way is like this fascination with the archetypal world and almost like wanting to wear that or show that or become that or do something with it. And so you can have it like the ISFP performer who like actually does things to embody the archetype, like in costuming and that kind of stuff and the way they sing and all of that, to like bring that out, to be an archetype. For ISTP, I think it's more like an obsession with particular archetypal energies. And then, you know, grappling with your boss as if your boss is the devil. It's a little bit more like a thinking approach rather than the ISFP's feeling approach. I think the one of the ways it shows up for both of them, which is can be really disconcerting, especially for the people around them, is that introverted intuiting can give us this meta perspective. And at times, both of those types, you can sit down and you can talk with them. You have this amazing discussions of like philosophy and psychology and sociology and politics and economics, and they're interested and they have interesting ideas and all of that. And then they turn around and go on in their life as if, one, you never had that discussion at all, because none of that actually absorbed into their like their actual heroic worldview or operating system. And then the other is that they can be completely blind to a meta perspective of their own behavior and activities. They're really literally the quintessential person, especially ISFP, who yells, "I'm not angry." And or yells that you're the one who's angry when you're just like standing there. All of a sudden, they went from having really good meta perspective to having none at all. And then afterwards, they're like, "Oh my God, I was such an idiot. Like, why did I do that?" And so there's like the super tunnel vision that can happen where they sort of get lost without that perspective. And then eventually they pull out of it. And it's sort of like ISTJ or INTJ going back and being like, "Oh yeah, I didn't need to be like dish out that moral screed as hard as I did. I was so harsh on those people. Like, they're just people. I didn't need to say that, but I did. And actually, I don't feel that badly about it." So I think that that's how it can show up, as either the NI element is really strong and it's embraced and we see this like, "Oh, wow, they could pass for intuiting types, no problem." And then on the other hand, there's just like complete blindness to it.
Yeah, I could totally see that. With ISFPs, I know, they'll have a very big vision for their life and then they'll wake up one day and then their mood will change and they're like, "I actually don't feel like doing this anymore." Yes. So
yeah. And for ISTP, there can be this combined with the introverted thinking, this incredible, incredible confidence that they're right. I do recall ISTP, and she says it's like talking about herself and something she had just said. She's like, "Oh, it's always amazing to like when I can prove Jung wrong." I'm like, "No, that's not what you did. Yeah, that's not what happened. I'm glad you feel very confident and good about that, but that's not what happened." And it's like this weird sort of like overconfidence that you know, can then go away afterwards. And sometimes they're like, "Oh, I'm an idiot and I'm a nobody."
And sometimes it'll get in the way of their fourth function too, their desire for connection with the group or with others. Mm-hmm. For instance, a hypothetical situation. I send a meme to an ISTP and they feel like, "Oh, I've already seen stuff like that." And every time they kind of find a way to shut it down, it's like,
yes, yes.
And I is like, "I already know about that." And it's like in a kind of way where you don't feel like you can connect because they're not presenting any possibilities, but they're shutting down possibilities with the mm-hmm. NI, the NI tunnel vision that shows up mm-hmm. in them.
Mm-hmm. And the same with ISTP and interpreting. And I think ISFP to some extent too, interpreting interpersonal communication. Like, "Oh, the fact that when you said this, it meant that." And it's like, "No, you don't know that it meant that, but they know that you meant that, whatever, like you meant to insult me by saying that." And the other person's like, "No, I just like, that's just something I randomly said." And it very much is like that NI confidence of what we know.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's ISFJ and INFJ with tertiary introverted thinking. So how would you describe that?
I want to give them their fair shake. So I'm going to come back to the text here because I know that's also your type.
can get hypercritical, yet are also personally quite sensitive, even to small slights. So the TI is the hypercritical part, and yet the sensitivity is the extroverted feeling. Tend to get stuck in analysis paralysis. Constantly grapple with vague big ideas without getting clarity. Prefer simple mental models, except a specialty to endlessly tweak and elaborate on. To wordsmith it and all of that. Strongly favor or reject intellectual or cultural elitism. And there's this almost like fetishizing of scholarship and academia, which I find so odd. And I encountered that in academia, but I would use the word fetishize to describe it. Education, well, I went to Harvard, or like, oh, this person went there, or an INFJ or ISFJ occasionally will be the exact opposite and be like, oh, that means nothing. And then completely reject it. But for the most part, there is this favoritism of the intellectual. Easily define personal or local experiences as part of some global or grand drama. So it's that part of the ability of TI to notice a pattern or to provide an explanation for something, and then to sort of generalize that. Except that INFJ is going to be like, oh, well, and the reverse can happen too. So INFJ is like, oh, well, there was like a power imbalance in my marriage. And then they generalize that to all relationships everywhere throughout all of space and time. And it's like, no, that was just your experience. And that may port to other people, but it may not. And then the last one here I think is really important. Feel a strong inner or outer split. So in other words, they might come across as being very warm on the outside, but are inside very cool. And people sort of mistake the warmth for not knowing that the INFJ or ISFJ is actually like a thinking intellectual person. Or conversely, they'll come across as very cool and detached and distant on the outside, like no facial expression, this or that. And yet inside, they're actually feeling like warm and like very present with everyone. And they're like, wait, what? You thought I didn't care? Like, how could you think I didn't care? And as a TJ type, I have to say that is confusing because I am used to seeing like, oh yeah, the TJ types have less expression. The FP types have more expression, but we're always expressing however we're feeling actually. But the TI FE is like, sometimes TI is like, nope. And then other times the FE is what comes out. And it may be on the outside or it may be on the inside.
Yeah, that's so real. There's this thing that I'll do when I'm having troubles with my Asian family. I'll actually generalize it to all Asian people, and then people will catch me on this. Like, I'll have an ENFP friend who's like, Joyce, you know, it's not all Asians. And they'll say tilapia. It's toxic immigrant Asians. So that they made an NE acronym out of that for it. Because like they're like, don't generalize. Because with the FI and ENFPs, they also want to honor each individual too. So they're like, you're not honoring the individuals of your family. And I'm like, no, generalize, generalize. How about ESTP and ENTP with their tertiary extroverted feeling to summarize all the types?
Sure, absolutely. Let's look at those two to give them their fair shake there. Of course, knowing me, there we go. Okay. I'm like, what happened to my bookmark? Prone to blaming others for causing their emotions. Find themselves feeling needy while also meeting others' needs before their own. Tend to self-aggrandize while also being self-critical. So I think this is what people see on the outside. They see the ENTP or ESTP self-aggrandizing. Oh, I'm so amazing. I'm the smartest person in the room. Nobody knows that more than I do. Do we know somebody in the public domain who talks that way? But at the same time, internally, they are actually quite self-critical. But there is this like strange, like they're using FE to compliment and push up themselves as opposed to other people. Overly nice or mean and respectful or disrespectful. So like their expectations of what is appropriate in social situations, like how much respect or how much being nice or whatever it is often like they're surprised, disappointed, have over expectation, under expectation. They themselves like maybe are expecting high respect from other people, but they're not actually giving respect to the people that they're talking to without even realizing it. It ends up being, and then they're like, oh no, like how did I cause this? Can find themselves caught up in endless office politics and relationship drama. Being a very different type, I don't understand it, but it's the FE churning the politics here, the drama there, the relationship over here. This person said this to that person, and what did that really mean? And they weren't actually nice. They can get hyper-focused on societal values and policy issues, either for or against those. So they can be very, like, you can find ESTPs and ENTPs who are very conservative, who are very liberal. I mean, this is true for all types. But for them, the interest, the focus is the policy issues and the societal, like, big questions from, like, a TI philosophical. But it's about people in society. So it's an FE thing. It's like it's about other people. And then just, like, they get hyper-focused on all of that policy stuff. Not saying that's bad. Sometimes, you know, it's like ENFP using extroverted thinking, like it works really well. So they can do that well. Tend to overanalyze emotions and interpersonal issues without actually feeling anything. It's amazing to listen to an ENTP talk for an hour about a relationship. And it's clear to me as the listener, they're not actually in touch with any of their emotions at all as they're talking about this disastrous experience. And I'm like, you're not going to make any progress unless you feel them, even just for a few minutes. And so those are examples that are, and I mean, all of these are just examples, but they're examples of what, when there's a clash between that the third function and the second and first, and how they're like meeting at this boundary, what does that look like?
That was brilliantly articulated. A few other examples of neurotic extroverted thinking is I did a study on types in relationships, and then I asked ESTPs how they're like in relationships, and they're like, pros, I'm awesome, and then cons, I'm awesome. Yeah. And so there's this joking self-aggrandizing, hey, I'm going to make myself inflated as a humorous tool. Mm-hmm. So other people might get a little bit agitated by that, but it's their humor and it can be a little gritty. Yeah. And then there's some ESTPs and some ENTPs who identify with being a little bit amoral. They're a little bit like gray with morality. Mm-hmm. And it's because they can, especially like an ENTP can devil's advocate different sides with the NE. And so they can see the arbitrariness of morality. It can be a neurotic relationship with FI in that sense, in that there is that amorality that they have, this neutrality about morality, but at the same time, they actually can have a side that actually cares if they're backed into a corner, and they can get neurotic about that too.
Yeah, I would say good stuff, but not always good. Yes.
Yeah. And with ESTPs and ENTPs, they can look a little bit hard on the surface, but they're teddy bears inside. So the FE is like hidden with their macho man attitude.
Yeah. So I feel like it's just, this is one piece of the book, but I feel like it's something that can help people locate their type and to recognize what's going on. You know, so say like having understanding is half the battle to forgiveness or tolerance, is just seeing like, oh yeah, this is the person's neurotic boundary that's showing up here. And they're probably showing it because they're under stress or they haven't learned how to handle this yet, whatever it is. And I do think it does shift somewhat over time. It's not always in just the third function that people can, like stuff from the fourth function is also sometimes going to come in as part of this gray boundary zone.
Exactly. Yeah. One other example that's coming to me about ENTPs and ESTPs is there's this people-pleasing side to them that people don't really know about, but if you're actually in their inner circle, they can adopt your morality because it's like FE osmosing your group values from you. And then they can be confused. What are their values and what are your values? And so there is this like neuroticness around closeness can really affect them.
Yeah, it's when FE is involved with taking on others' needs and values as their own. And then if that's not very conscious, then there is this big question of where do I end and where does the other person begin? And in terms of like one's own values and needs. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And so on that note, thank you, Dario, for coming out. You really add a lot to the type sphere, and I'm really grateful for your presence. Your books, your neuroscience, the other things that you also add are invaluable. And I am so happy that I know someone like you. And it's such an honor to get the chance to talk with you. So thank you for giving me the chance to get to know you in this lifetime. And thank you for showing the audience members a little piece, a little sliver of the awesomeness that you are.
I'm the conduit for it. You know, I do want to say, and I appreciate it, the way especially introverted intuiting works is that, like, I start thinking about an idea, like, oh, what if we did something like this? And then I just wake up one morning and just it just comes out. And then it ends up on the page. I'm not actually thinking as I'm writing. So I sometimes feel like I'm just channeling, like, yeah, medium or something. And then it's like, okay, I guess that's what I wrote. And then a year later, people are like, oh, this is great what you wrote. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I have no memory of it. Yeah, so I feel really lucky that I've had the experiences and the sort of framework that can channel this. It's type can be like a mediumship practice. As a writer or probably as a counselor or something too, although that's not me, and being able to bring juicy new stuff to people.
Yeah. So thank you for being a conduit to the universal archetypes that surround us. And so feel free to check out Dario's books in the links below, and I'll see you all in the next episode.
Yes. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.